hockey night in New York. Welcome to the program, everyone. It is Wednesday, October 15th. We are coming at you live from the Hockey This Week studios on Long Island. I am Sean Cuthbert, accompanied by Mr. Tony Stabile and Mr. Paul Cuthbert on the other side. We got a big show for you tonight. We got Eric Hornick of MSG joining us a little later in the program. We also have Kevin Delury of the NYR blog coming on to talk some Rangers and some Islanders Rangers last night. We all know what happened there. And if you happen to be an Islander fan, probably feels like Paradise City right now because Islanders are on a roll right here. 3-0 to start the season. Big win against the Rangers last night. Tony, how you doing? And let's get some thoughts on these first couple of games the Islanders finally got on the board.
Hi, Shawnee. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, Tony.
Well, it's been an eventful few days. A couple of, first three games, I would say, on Long Island, hasn't it?
Yeah, you could say that. For whatever reason, the NHL made the Islanders and the Hurricanes wait longer than anybody else to get started, but they finally did. And I would have to say everybody on and around Long Island have to be pretty happy about how it started off.
I would say so. I mean, what were they, 15 goals in the first three games? It's something to that effect. I mean, the offense is... has been lighting it up so far.
Yeah, no, they got to say, they look fantastic, especially looking at the forward group. Mostly everything gelled into position for the Islanders in those first three games. I think it was a little nice that they got to open up against an injured Hurricanes, you know, maybe a little bit of a weaker team, good way to start, but maybe it didn't even matter. They pretty much looked like they were firing on most cylinders there for the first couple games against the Canes, and they lit it up.
I agree with you that the Canes are a team that are going to probably be towards the bottom of the standings this year. They have some injury problems, but it's a team that no matter who is playing for them, always gives the Islanders fits. I think they have 26 wins against the Islanders in the last 5 years. A team that is just historically been a poor matchup for the Islanders. And I mean, in all honesty, I mean they dominated those two games, pretty much from start to finish.
Yeah, no question about it. They looked really good, and I think what was Very nice to see from an Islander fan standpoint was that all the new guys were contributing. They chipped in and they fit right in. It was pretty incredible. And I mean, what more can you say about Johnny Boychuk just to start? I mean, he was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I mean, if you talk to anybody in the locker room, they'll give him all the credit in the world. I had the opportunity to speak to Thomas Hickey after the game on Saturday, and he said, listen, we're not winning. We're not winning these games without Johnny back there. He's added a whole new dynamic to their to the power play. He's added a steadying force on defense, and he's taken some of these younger guys, and he's already started to try to get his way in there and give some advice and put some of the experience he's gotten with Boston with the Islanders already, and I think he's been outstanding. I really have. And Hickey told me that the team look is just gelling. Not even on the ice, just in general. He's never seen a team come together this quickly, especially after the trades from Letty and Boychuk.
Right, and winning aside, and that'll obviously help, but it just seems like the attitude and spirits are very high with the team. They're feeling very good about themselves. They've been saying nothing but good things. It seems like, what we've heard, even in the past, the Islanders have had a tight locker room. All those guys are very close, and it seems like all the new guys are acclimating themselves very well and very quickly, not just Boychuk, but Letty, Grabowski, Kuhlman as well. And the great thing to see is that all those guys played a big role in all three of those games that we've seen so far. Grabowski's already got a point a game. Kuhlman has made some fantastic plays, even on the defensive side and chipping in a little offensively. The forecheck has just been pretty relentless. Kevin Weeks of NHL, he was actually raving about them. I was watching NHL on the fly last night, and he had a lot of good things to say. So far, so great, I would say, for the Islanders. And then you look at Brock Nelson.
I was just going to say the second line couldn't look any better than it has. I mean, he has been... And we talked about this last week before the Islanders had actually played a game, and we said that Capuano had said that he could not picture taking Brock Nelson off that second line. And we were like, all right,
right.
It. But, I mean, you obviously see why at this point. The guy has been outstanding. I mean, he's been good in the face-off circle. He's almost impossible to knock off the puck. He's standing in front of the net. He's screening. I mean, how many goals is Boychuk able to put in? Either off of his knee, his skate, or whatever. I mean, he's just parked himself in front of the net, he's been outstanding. I mean, every facet of the game, the guy's been great.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see. You know, obviously everybody was very hopeful coming into the season that you know, Jack was making the right decision, keeping him at center rather than putting him on Johnny and Kyle's wing. We kind of thought that was going to happen over the summertime. But, you know, Capuano stuck by it. You know, he said, look, I want Brock in the middle. And he's looked real good with Grabowski and Strom on his wing. Mm-hmm. I believe Strom already has 2 assists on the season. Oh, I'm sorry, 4 assists on the season. Correction.
He had 2 on Saturday night. He had 2 more. He didn't have 2 Saturday. He had 2 opening night, and he had 2 more against the Rangers.
Well, look, shows you what I know. But anyway, 4 assists. So, look, I mean, everybody looks good. 15 goals over 3 games, fantastic. And then, you know, you look at the net, and Yaroslav Halak has already started to provide that goaltending that the Islanders are probably missing in the last year or two. And, last night, for example, you know, that second period, which was basically a Ranger onslaught, Halak, you know, kept it manageable, and the Islanders prevailed.
And, you know, I was talking to someone today about this, and they had said on the Ranger broadcast that they were talking to one of the Ranger coaches in between the second and third periods. And the coach said, listen, we're going to just continue to put the pucks on the net, and eventually if we keep this pressure up, one of them is going to go in. And this, on a usual Islander team or you know, in years past, that probably would have happened. That just, you know, the onslaught would have just continued until that backbreaking goal scored, and then that would have been the turning point of the game. Last night, Halak goes out there, puts a stonewall in the second period. They go into that locker room right after they tie it at the late stages of the second period. And they say to each other, look, this man kept us in the game. We're tied. We got to come out there and we got to score. And what? And within 2 minutes of the third period, they were ahead 3-2, 4-2, 5-2. I mean, it seemed like we blinked and then we were up 3 goals.
Right. And Halak played well in the opening night against the Canes. He kind of did something similar in the first period. He kind of weathered a storm there for them. He allowed the Islanders to have a chance to take that game as well. But I think the second period of the Ranger game is really the first time, you know, very early on here that we've seen Halak maybe even steal a game, you know, for the Islanders, and gave them that goaltending that they might not have gotten last season. And it was great to see, and you just hope that he keeps that up and he continues to earn that big contract he got.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the prevailing thought of Halak when he came here was the more rubber he sees, the better off that he is. The more shots that he sees, the better he gets. And that seemed to be the case. I mean, he was sharp right from the get-go, but, I mean, he just seemed to get better and better and better and better as the night went on. And the more shots that he faced. I mean, look, he ended up with 40 saves, gave up 3 goals. That was a very, very good performance. And it was probably the most important performance because that second period of weathering the storm, like I said, years past, that's a game that they end up going down and they lose that game.
And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because, funny enough, I caught a tweet earlier today by Jason Kay of THN. He mentioned that Halak is 12-0-3 in his past 15 games where he's faced 40 shots or more. That's just unbelievable.
There you go. There's the proof is in the pudding.
And right on cue here, we got Eric Hornick of MSG joining us live. Eric, thank you so much for joining us on the show. How are you, buddy?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Thanks again, Eric. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Big start here for the Islanders, 3-0. Sweep of a home-and-home against the Hurricanes. Big win against the Rangers last night. Eric, your thoughts here on the early performance of the Islanders?
Well, I think first, Jason probably got the same note that I had because I used that in the skinny. We actually needed extra skinny this morning because so much went on last night. But Halak, was terrific. You look back at the beginning of that game, too. Let's deal with the first period.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Eric, are you there? All right, looks like we lost Eric. We'll get him back in a little while. Just to continue off of that, Tony. Big start for the Islanders here. Big 3 wins. I don't know what happened there with Eric, but we will continue on here.
Well, we were talking a little bit about Halak and you know, the over 40 saves, what is it, 12-0 and whatever. I don't
12-0-3 over 15,
that's,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you look at numbers like that, that's exactly what we were talking about. I mean, he's, you know, the more rubber he faces, the better off he's going to be.
Sorry about that, Eric. We got you back. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you, and I think the line's a little better now, too, so maybe that's a good thing.
All right, fantastic. So let's pick up where we left off there. You were talking about the Islanders, you know, starting off great here in Yaroslav Halak. So why don't you just pick up from there?
Sure. Halak, you know, before we get to talking about the second period, where he faced more shots than an Islander goaltender had faced in about 2 years, you have to look at the first period. The Rangers had that very early power play, if you recall, and at one point the shots were 6-0, and Halak held the Islanders in the game. And I think either Howie or Butch used the phrase, weather the storm, just keep the game close, keep it scoreless if you could, until the Islanders get their legs going. And to a man, if you read some of the press clippings after the game, or even if you listen to John Tavares during our second period interview with Shannon, they didn't think they played very well in the first two periods. And clearly in the second period, the Rangers had all the momentum, all the shots on goal. But Halak was able to keep them close, and Tavares was able to get them tied. And then we all saw what happened in the third period, where the Islanders just ran over the Rangers, in that first 5 or 6 minutes, like they weren't even there. It was an impressive performance, that kind of validated what had gone on over the weekend, when the Islanders swept an admittedly pretty weak Carolina Hurricane team.
Hey, Eric, thanks for coming on. It's Tony here. I got a question for you. The 3-0 team now, it's the first time the Islanders have been 3-0 since the 2001-2002 season. I believe they started that season 4-0. You were around then, and there's been a lot of comparisons to this team and the resurgence that they've had to that 2001-2002 team. What do you see as the similarities between these two?
Before they ever dropped the puck, Thursday or so last week, Howie is on his way to Carolina, as we often do. We're exchanging some text, and I'm like, I said, it feels like 0102 to me a little bit, there was some optimism over the course of the summer, and then, of course, what we jokingly refer to as the feast during the fast, during the Yom Kippur fast, the Islanders acquired both Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk, and all of a sudden, the optimism went from, this team should make the playoffs, to, boy, this team could be really good. And nothing that either Boychuk or Leddy have done over the last, over the last week has changed that in any direction other than this team could win 4 straight Stanley Cups. But we're not. Let's not get that far.
Wow.
Let's not get that far ahead of ourselves here. But it does have that 0102 feeling. The names are different, obviously, in 0102. Everyone was very excited. It was Michael Pekka and Alexei Yashin. And then right when the season, before the season started, the NHL used to have something called a waiver draft, where when teams were cutting down to their final numbers, players would be put on waivers across the league, and they would draft in reverse order. Detroit Red Wings had a problem, much like Boston and Chicago had this year. Boston and Chicago's problem this year obviously was cap-related, but Detroit's problem was they had 3 goalies, and they put Chris Osgood out there, and the Islanders grabbed him. And instead of going into the season with Garth Snow as their number one and Rick DiPietro, who had played maybe 15 games in the NHL to that point, as their number two, they went in with Chris Osgood and Garth Snow, and they got off to that terrific start. They won the first 4, all on the road, in fact. Came home, looked like they were going to win a 5th straight, which they've never done before or since. And then in the home opener that night, Luke Robitaille scored with about 10 seconds to go, and some guy named Eiserman won the game in overtime, and they fell to the Detroit Red Wings. But, that was part of an 11-game streak where they went 9-0-1-1. In those days, the NHL kept 2 columns, one for overtime losses and one for ties. But they went 9-0-1-1 to start that season, and they were in off and running, and that gave them some room. They had a couple of slumps later on in that season, but the good thing is when you're not, it's kind of like if you're in school, and perhaps my son is listening here, if you bank points early in the semester or early in the season, and then you run into a little slump, it's not, it's a little bit different than if you're always fighting from behind trying to get back to a certain point.
You're absolutely right, Eric. We had the same conversation last week. We said the same thing, that they, you can weather the storm being 6, 7, 8 games up in the column, and you're absolutely right there. I agree with you 100%.
Right, and the hope is that, they don't need that padding in the beginning. Hopefully they can, keep some sort of, consistent effort here and keep the wins coming instead of doing what that 2002 team did, and they were pretty much .500 for the rest of the year. But needless to say, they got in. They had a wonderful playoff series against Toronto, and at the very least, we're hoping that this Islander team will get into the playoffs themselves. Eric, I know it's only three games into the season so far, but there's been a lot of big numbers from the Islanders already as far as goals scored and whatnot. Are there any sort of I know you're the big stat man, so any sort of record, maybe not records, but just big numbers that kind of stood out to you over the course of these three games that maybe the Islanders haven't done in a long time or maybe even for the first time?
Well, there's a whole slew of them, quite honestly. I joked with the people in Islander PR who, put this skinny up on their website that, normally the beginning of the season, the skinny is a little, for lack of a better term, skinnier. And, as it's come up, this season, that is certainly not the case. And all the numbers, are good, which, is obviously a nice thing. The 15 goals you talked about, they haven't done that since they scored 17 in three games to open the 87-88 season. That was the last time the Islanders won a division championship, by the way, the 87-88 season, Dennis Potvin's last season in the National Hockey League. You look at other things. They've won actually six straight games. I'm sure most people have forgotten. The Islanders won their last three games to end last season. They went on the road and won all three. So they've won six straight games. Now, that's the first time they've won six straight games at any point since they did so in February of 2008. But if they should win tomorrow, the San Jose Sharks come in, they are unbeaten, 3-0-0. The Islanders are unbeaten, they're 3-0-0. But if the Islanders can win tomorrow, and I know it's a little bit strange because it's a multi-season streak, but the last time the Islanders won seven games was leading into the All-Star break in 1990. They won. They had a nine-game winning streak from New Year's Eve, the last day of 89, into January 19th of 1990. They won nine straight games. Show you how long ago that was. The ninth game was in Winnipeg, the first time Winnipeg was in the league. it has been a ridiculously long time since they've had a streak of that sort, and they have a shot to do it tomorrow against the San Jose team. Then let's face it, no matter what they do in the regular season, nobody will give them a whole lot of credit until they manage to put something together in the playoffs.
You're absolutely right, Eric. The Nassau Coliseum has been jobs, and for what? How long have you been doing that job now? 20 some odd years, right, Eric?
No, it's 32. Be
33 years.
In January.
Wow, as long as I've been alive.
That is impressive. we needed to know how old you are. Anyway, 32 years, Eric. So tell me, since you've been reporting to the Coliseum for 32 years now, what is your Coliseum? Your best memory there.
My best memory there. There's so many, but I'll give you a couple that come off the top of my head. Two of them in 1982, which is right when I started doing this. I've often joked that I was responsible for the 15 game winning streak because the first game of that streak was the first game I did. But the 15th game of that streak, where John Tinelli scores with 47 seconds left to beat Chico Resch, give them the 15th straight win, sets the NHL record at the time. There have been a couple of teams since then that have won more than 15 straight, but they did it with the benefit of either overtime and or shootouts. So if you want to look at it this way, in the entire history of the National Hockey League, and the National Hockey League will celebrate its centennial, in 2017, the entire history of the league, one team has been better than another in 60 minutes, 15 straight times, and that was that New York Islander team in 82. And then 2 months later, it almost all fell apart, down 3-1 to Pittsburgh in game five of the opening round series, a best of five. Al Arbour decided he needed a timeout, and the best way he could get a timeout at the time was change his goalies. So he brought Roley Melanson off the bench, really for one reason. In those days, you warmed up the goalie when you changed goalies. That gave his Stars a chance to rest. The Islanders somehow managed to score two goals in regulation, and then John Tinelli won it in overtime. And those two early memories, part of it was that I was 18 years old when those two things happened. So, those are the types of things, that you really remember. How loud the Coliseum was in May of 2013 for the playoff games with Pittsburgh. That was, an unbelievable experience. And what I really liked about that was it gave my kids an opportunity to understand, what that building feels like, at that emotion. The great thing about hockey is you walk into the building, you never really know when the next big moment will be. Maybe it'll be tomorrow. With the Sharks in town, maybe they'll start off with a fourth straight win. I'm very interested to see what kind of a crowd shows up at the Coliseum. The fans on Saturday were absolutely incredible. I know there are a lot of seats still available for the game on Thursday. I saw that the Islanders were actually offering a promotion for seats downstairs for $35 through a sponsor if you order them between now and, say, 4 o'clock tomorrow. But I'd love to see all those seats filled and hear the building as loud or close to as loud as it was on opening night.
Yeah, absolutely, Eric. And it's funny. I did see on Twitter that after last night's win, ticket prices shot up on third-party sites like StubHub and whatnot. So it looks like we might see a little more fans in the seats last night, thanks to the start that they've had so far. And just to go to the Skinny, the NYI Skinny, your website, you've been doing this thing pretty much throughout the beginning of the year here, which I think is pretty awesome. It happened at the Coliseum, basically a nightly rundown of different things that have happened on each night. And maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what happened on October 15th back in 1977.
Well, every morning at exactly 7:40 a.m., I'm somewhat of a numerologist, as you might imagine. So the Skinny, you can always find the Skinny. I always resend a tweet for the Skinny at exactly 7:11 a.m., the time Bobby Nystrom scored the goal to win the Stanley Cup. 7:40 a.m. represents the number of wins one Alger J. Arbor had as the Islander head coach. So at 7:40 a.m. on my website, it publishes it happened at the Coliseum, a daily look back at an event, hopefully the biggest event that happened at the Coliseum on that particular day. So 37 years ago today, some guy named Mike Bossy played his first game at the Coliseum. And yes, he did indeed score a goal. And I used that event for today. Actually, I have some people complaining about my choice of events, believe it or not, because on this day two or three years ago, I guess it is now, John Tavares scored a hat trick in a game the Islanders beat the Rangers. Part of it is that when I started looking at, putting this together, I started realizing that there were an awful lot of Islanders beating the Rangers. And, I did want to try to balance it both in terms of, across their history, not just concentrate on the Cup years, not just concentrate on recent stuff, not just concentrate on wins over the Rangers, although there are a lot of them, I will tell you that, because I've pre-written it. I tried this a couple of years ago to do what I call the 40 and 40, and I was writing it as the season went on, and I just basically ran out of time. So this summer, I pre-wrote a good deal of this. I'm well into the end of February with the writing of this. So this will go on, and the last episode of this will actually air on May 24th, because believe it or not, the Islanders have never played a game at the Coliseum later than May 24th, which is the date in 1980 when some guy named Bobby Nystrom scored a goal that we all remember.
Wow. Well, Eric, we can't thank you enough for joining us on the show tonight. Great stuff, as always. Hope to have you on the show soon, and thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me. Hope everyone follows me on Twitter at eHornick and also nyiskinny.com. One of the things I find out, the better the team plays, the more people that follow me. So that's kind of nice, too.
There you go, Eric. All right, Eric Hornick, everybody, of MSG and also, as he said, nyiskinny.com. You can follow him at eHornick on Twitter, and great stuff from Eric there, huh, Tony?
He is the Islander number man. He knows it all. I mean, you want to know something, you want to know a number, you want to know anything, this guy knows it. I mean, he is great.
Yeah, he should probably start his own quiz show or something like that. I don't think there's anybody out there that can beat him, that's for sure.
No, I think he is the guy.
All right, so let's keep it rolling here. You are listening to Hockey Night in New York on the HTW Radio Network. We are coming at you live from the Hockey This Week studios on Long Island. Tony, let's talk a little more Islander hockey here. How about special teams? Tell me a little about what you saw through these three games for the Islanders.
Well, let's start with the good, and you could see the power play is obviously off to a fantastic start. As we said before, Thomas Hickey had said that adding Boychuk and that shot to the to the back of that power play onto the blue line has definitely made a huge difference. You see Brock Nelson pretty much parking himself in front of the goaltender on a nightly basis, and that power play is outstanding right now. I mean, he gets that low hard shot I think I have no idea how Nelson's even walking around because I think he took one off each knee over the last couple of games. So, you know, but it, you know, they just is a new dynamic. You know, they haven't had a shot like that back there, and it was funny because Howie was talking about it last night with Marc-Andre Bergeron. But that guy can never hit the net. You know, Boychuk seems to hit the net every single time he takes the shot. You know, he's got a very accurate shot, very low shot, and you know it's very good to you know to try to get a rebound or try to be able to tip in. So, I think that the you know they continue to play like this, the power play is gonna be a real strength of them this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You can only hope that you know it continues. I mean, that's the rough thing. You know, everything looks great three great games in, but you know as we've seen in seasons past, the Islanders have gotten off to good starts before, only to kind of let themselves and the fan base down. So you can only hope that this year is different. And I will say it feels different so far. You know, all the acquisitions, it really, really does. I mean, this is, we keep going back to this, but it really does feel like the beginning of that 2001-2002 season with all the new blood and with the great attitude that the team has so far and the way that they've just kind of come flying out of the gate. To keep it on special teams, power play looks good. The penalty kill so far, not so much. 66.7 success rate so far. They let a lot up against Carolina over those two games. I believe they only let one in. If actually, did they let in any goals against the Rangers on the PK?
No.
There you go. So
yeah, it's up. I think their penalty killing percentage is up 20% since the second period on Saturday night. So
there you go. So it was a big improvement already, but you know the numbers are so small with the amount of games we've had so far. But you know, if you want to be picky, if you want to find a spot in the Islanders so far that maybe hasn't been as good as everything else, it probably is the penalty kill. Struggling a little bit. It looks like they're running around a little too much. Maybe overcommitting on the chasing and doing a little too much watching. What did you see with the penalty kill so far, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a you know, it's an ongoing problem with the Islanders. You know, you saw last night that, you know, the inability to get the puck out of the zone. They're clearly missing Calvin DeHaan. You know, he was a big part of the penalty kill the second half of last year. On the flip side, you've seen a little bit of Nikolai Kuhlman out there, who he's been very, very good, positionally. He's a relentless checker. I mean, the guy is just constantly, you know, hounded whoever's got the puck. So you have some good things that you've seen. You know, they obviously, you know, Jiří Tolusti lit them up the other night on the penalty.
Always does.
You just have these abstract guys over time that the Islanders just cannot seem to get away from. Ryan Malone killed them for years when he was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And now you got a guy like Tolusti who he just seems to score every time that they play them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw that night after he scored the hat trick. I think he only has two career hat tricks, and they both came against the Islanders.
Everybody out there can
fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case.
I would not doubt it. I wouldn't doubt that you know 20% or 25% of his goals in the NHL have been against him.
Right, and then you got fans everywhere picking him up on their fantasy teams.
Yeah,
and
well,
then they're
going to
be disappointed.
Islands,
and right, exactly.
Not playing the Islanders, you might as well just drop him. We'll just sit him on the bench for the rest of the year.
Right, right. So yeah, maybe we're being a little picky here, but you know, if there's anything, you know, and another good thing is, and we kind of touched on it already, is that, you know, even though the Islanders had a huge win against the Rangers last night, 6-3, doubled up on them, had that good, big third period, Jack Capuano wasn't satisfied.
No, and we talked about this before we came on the air. You know, last year and the year before that, you'd have Jack on the on the post game, and what would you be saying? Oh, we're happy with the way we played. We're happy with this. We're happy with that, and we need to work on this. We need to work on that. Last night, he comes out, the team withstands a 20-shot second period. His goaltender stands on his head. His team comes back, scores four goals in the first, 9 minutes of the third period.
Yep.
They go up 6-2 in the Rangers building, a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Okay, they win the game 6-3, and you hear him in the post-game press conference, and you would think that they lost 5-1. He was not happy with the way that they played.
Right.
And I understand it because he did give up 20 shots in the second
sure.
period. They didn't play well that way. You know, it really threw, you know, portions of the first period and most of the second
period.
Yeah,
no, the second period looked pretty dicey, for
yeah,
sure.
Exactly. But, you know, as we said before, Halak, you know, stood on his head, did what he had to do. They go into that locker room. They point to this, you know, you point to Halak and say, listen, this man got us to the point where we're tied. We got to get him some goals and we got to get this win. And they did. And, you know, years passed. I don't think that they win that game, you know.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I have to say, I think it's a great thing that that's, you know, Capuano's attitude. He's not patting him on the back. He's not saying, yeah, you know, we had a great game. You know, he's really focusing on what they need to improve. And I think, you know, that's going to keep the team level-headed. It's going to keep them, you know, on an even keel. They're not going to get too high when they have games like last night or when they have a three-game winning streak. You know, they're still going to be focusing on what they need to fix, what they need to work on. So, you know, I think that was really great to see that Capuano was kind of, you know, trying to keep the team, you know, very level here.
And he's been that way since day one of camp. I mean, you talk to him all through camp, and he has not been one of these, well, we're trying to work on this, we're trying to work on that. This is not the same Jack as we've seen in years past. You know, he is really looking at results. You know, he's really results driven at this point, whereas it was before, maybe it was more teaching and it was more trying to get the most out of, you know, the younger players, where now it's, you know, let's start producing or you're not going to be in the lineup. And even you saw it. I mean, the first game, I thought Josh Bailey had not a very good game the first game of the year. Mm-hmm. I thought he played outstanding the second game. I thought that he was engaged. I think he embraced his third line role. You know, playing with Kuhlman, he made some very good defensive plays. Got the puck out. He was on the ice. I mean, yeah, Jack rewarded him with being on the ice the last minute
right.
and a half or minute of the game.
Right.
Scores that big goal. You know, I think it was the fourth goal they ended up. Was that the fourth goal?
I believe it was.
And again, he played well last night. He's been pressuring. He's been getting into the corners. He's been playing with more confidence. He doesn't seem to be just, you know, fiddling around with the puck and dropping it off. And to me, it's because they put the pressure on him to say, listen, either you're going to play this way, or you're going to produce, or you're not going to be in the lineup.
No, I agree with you, Tony. I haven't had any problem with Josh Bailey's game so far. I know that he's kind of the fan base is whipping boy, you know, right now. He hasn't been living up to the potential that everybody's hoped to see. But his role is a little different now. He's playing on that third line with Franz Nielsen and Nikolai Kuhlman. And I think so far he's settled in nicely. And like Kuhlman, you know, he doesn't need to put up a lot of points to be a productive member of the team.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, if he can play well defensively, if he throws his body around, he hits guys, you know, he's responsible in his own zone coming back. You know, I have no problem with that. You know, as long as he's doing something that's going to help the team win, that's fine by me, and it should be fine by everybody else. I mean, they have enough guys now in that top six where we let them worry about scoring, let them worry about putting up points. If Josh Bailey's more comfortable or at least more settled in a role where he's playing a two-way game or at least a more defensive type of game, that's fine, and I think the team will benefit from that. The only interesting thing is I know we have a little more time, you know, until that happens, but when a guy like Michael Grabner comes back to the lineup, what happens? What do you do? I mean, you got to figure Bailey's one of the first guys you look at there.
Well, you'd have to. I mean, at that point, you're going to have to look. I mean, listen, you mentioned before, Ryan Strom is off to a very good start. Nielsen, obviously, is not going anywhere. Corey Conacher, you can say whatever you want about Corey Conacher. He's looked very, very good on that top line. He may not have 5 goals or 11 points or whatnot over the past couple of games, but he's created scoring chances.
How about
he's
that breakaway?
Could he make Ryan McDonough look any worse than he did? I mean, that was
pretty
unbelievable. He just completely untrust the guy and just blew right past him.
Yeah, it's a shame he didn't finish. It would have been pretty wild, but I didn't see that coming. I mean, it's just like he just turned the Jets on. He had a burst of speed, and he was just like, oh, excuse me, Ryan, I'm going to head to the net now.
Oh, forget it. He's got speed. He's a tenacious checker. He's the first guy into the zone. I like him on that first line. I really do. And he's, you know, I mean, again, they haven't been producing point over point, you know, at even strength on the first line, but they have some chemistry out there, and they're starting to build it. And, you know, I like what he's doing, you know, in the zone. John was, you know, Tavares was a little bit shaky last night, but, I mean, listen, the guy can't play, at a high level at every shift that he's out there. He's going to make mistakes. I mean, you know, he's your guy is human, but.
Right.
You know, that first line, I think, has been very. I think each of the four lines have all been solid to this point.
Solid. Yeah, sure. I'll definitely say solid. And just to expand on that first line of Conacher, I mean, I guess, you know, somewhat similarly to Josh Bailey in the sense that it doesn't really matter if Conacher's putting up points as long as the line is putting up points, as long as he's contributing to getting JT the puck or getting Kyle the puck
right.
so they can put points, up on the board. That's all that's really going to matter. As long as the numbers are still coming from the line, you know, that's the biggest thing. Even if, you know, if Conacher's got, you know, 20 points less than Tavares and Nposo by the end of the season, really not going to be a big deal as long as, you know, JT and Kyle are producing. I don't think it's really going
to
matter.
And I think Conacher's got enough offensive flair to be able to bury the puck if he's given the opportunity. We saw that the other night when he scored
right.
his first goal. He can put the puck in the net. He's got good hands. He's got some offensive potential. So, I don't see there's any reason why he doesn't stay on that line for the foreseeable future.
Right. As long as he doesn't become a liability,
right.
you know, they're going to give him every opportunity. It will get interesting, like I said before, you know, when Grabner comes back, you know, who do you look at?
That's
you know, who
–
Yeah, I mean – with Ryan Strom already having a good start, as you said, I mean, do you even think about sending him down to Bridgeport because he can clear waivers?
I don't think he can.
So then, you know, what do you do? Does a guy
guy's
like,
at a point a game? He's almost at a point. He's over a point a game at this point. So how can you, you know, how can you think about sending him down? I mean, at this point right now, it's a good, you know, you got a couple more weeks to kind of, you know, get a feel for what's going on. But, you know, I mean, at this point, I mean, Ryan Strom looks like an NHLer. I can't see, you know, I'd like to see him shoot the puck a little bit more. But other than that, I mean, you know, I think he's been, you know, he's been very strong on that wing. And, you know, if you had any question about whether he could play the wing, and Grabowski too, I mean, that line looks really good together.
No, I think if anything else, you know, if and when Grabner is ready, maybe they just don't rush him. They say, you know, Mike, why don't you take your time? You know, assuming that, you know, everybody's still going the way they're going by that time.
And, you know, and also going on by if there's no other injuries at that point.
Right, which is, you know, I mean, it'll be surprising if nobody else gets hurt between now and then.
Of course.
But, you know, under the assumption that everybody's still healthy, it'll be very interesting to see how Capuano and his staff handles that. And just to swing it to the defensive side, what do you think of the third pairing so far, Griffin Reinhart and Brian Strait?
Wow. I think I'm a little surprised that Brian Strait is still in the lineup. I really thought after Saturday night's game that Matt Donovan would have made his season debut last night. Reinhart, listen, he's shown some flashes of being the type of defenseman that they think that they're getting when they drafted him. Big, strong kid, positionally plays himself really well. Has he made some mistakes? His guys are starting to go by him. Listen, that's going to happen, okay? The guy was in junior last year. He's in the NHL now. This is a completely different game. It's a much faster game, and he's got to think that much faster. So, you know, he's going to end up in the AHL. It's probably a good thing because had the Islanders not acquired Boychuk or Letty, he would have been one of your second-pairing defensemen, and you'd see at this point, you know, that there are deficiencies within his game.
Yeah.
And it's because
he's too much.
And it's just because, you know, I mean, he needs to develop, you know, properly. And this is the way defensemen are. I mean, Dennis Poppin will tell you, he's been quoted as saying this, that, you know, the first 100 games, doesn't matter who you are, you know, the first 100 games as a defenseman, you have no idea what you're doing out there.
Right.
And we think we've seen that because, before we went on the air, we were talking about Victor Hedman. And Victor Hedman, going into last season, was looking like a bust, and now all of a sudden he's one of the top three defensemen in the game. So I mean, the guy's outstanding now. So I mean, you know, the guy needs to transition in. Calvin DeHaan has been skating this week. I think that you will see him go right into the lineup as soon as they can get him in there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him in the lineup tomorrow. He was skating again with the team with practice today.
Right.
You need. You know, to get him back in the lineup. And one of those two, I think you need to get both of those guys out of the lineup, you know, as soon as you can. But at the very least, I think that DeHaan is ready, DeHaan will probably go back to Bridgeport.
Now you mentioned both of those guys, and I guess the only way that really happens right now is if they bring, Donovan in or if Vishnovsky comes back. But we will come back to that because joining us right now on the line is our Ranger buddy, Kevin DeLurie. KD, how you doing, pal?
I've been better. I really didn't plan on calling, but Paulie just sent me a text like, dude, you got to call in.
Yeah, you definitely kept us waiting here, buddy. I was wondering if you got a little scared. We appreciate you braving the storm here and coming on after last night's result. Let's just dive right into it. You know, let's get through it. You know, breathe, Kevin. We'll be all right here. tell us what you saw last night from a Ranger perspective. You know, talk about the Rangers, what you saw in their game, and what you might want to see improve, I suppose, after seeing the final score.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem I'm seeing with this team right now is on defense. You know, they're having problems covering the front of the net. They're having problems with pressure coming down on them on the forecheck, which is, you know, hurting them in the transition game. They can't get the puck out of the zone clean. They're not getting through the neutral zone and then getting it deep, which makes them effective. So their problems really are starting on the back end. And that was the problem with the team early on last year, was the defense. Once the defense sort of got together and gathered themselves in late December, that's when they went on the run. They made the big trade for, well, not a big trade, but they made the trade for Klein and they got rid of Delzato and they were sort of on their way. I'm hoping the same thing will happen again this year where for some reason they're having some trouble with chemistry this year, growing pains, whatever you want to call it, which they shouldn't be having, I guess, since they have pretty much everyone back from last year. you know, the Boyle injury hurts, and it really shows the lack of depth that they have on the blue line. He goes down, and now you're trying out all these guys, you know, Hunwig and Lance Nykoska, who is a complete disaster. You know, and I know there's been a lot of hate on Koska, and I'm not really trying to stick up for the guy, but what do people expect? I mean, this guy didn't make the team out of training camp. He didn't make the team at a training camp, and he found himself paired with Staal going against John Tavares last night. I mean, was anyone expecting that outcome to be very good?
Out
in the Rangers' favor? I mean, so, you know, I mean, listen, the guy is not good, and he deserves to be criticized, but he shouldn't have been in that position to begin with. So, you know, where the Rangers go now, you know, it looks like Hunwick is going to be back in there. Yeah, I thought he was decent in his first game. There's some other defenders who've looked worse than Hunwick. You know, John Moores has struggled to start the year. Girardi and McDonough both disappointed so far. You know, I don't want to come down on the Rangers' new captain, but it looks like, you know, I don't know if he's worrying too much about being the captain and what that sort of entails, because he's not the Ryan McDonough we all know and love. So for me, it all starts on the back end. Once that gets cleaned up, I think you'll see a much better team.
Right on, Kevin. And just to expand on that, I mean, I know it's only been four games, but through these four games so far, have you noticed anything, you know, maybe where you've missed any one particular guy that's left the team due to, you know, the cap crunch and a couple of guys that ended up going to Tampa Bay, like Boyle and Stroman? Was there anything you saw, oh, man, we really could have used, you know, this guy here, this guy there during one play or another?
Yeah, I mean, Stroman, you know, is probably the guy they miss most right now, only because they're struggling so bad defensively. You know, he had a good rapport with Staal last year. He's a good possession defender. You know, he's a guy, you know, everyone loves the, you know, analytics these days and the fancy stats. So he was a good possession guy. He's a good Corsi guy for them last year. You know, Staal struggled to start the year, whether it was, you know, the first game or first couple of periods with Boyle, and then since then, him and Klein had a tough time together. So, you know, if nothing else, Mark Staal misses Stroman. So, yeah, I mean, when you're struggling on defense, you look at, well, who's gone on defense. There's only one guy who's not back from last year, you know, and that's Stroman. So I would say he, at this point, is probably the guy we're missing the most. I mean, I think offensively they're looking good. I mean, you have Nash who's you know, stepping up now. So, you know, they brought in Stepniak, who's sort of playing the Pouliot role. So he's not missed as much as you might think. Boyle, you know, he was a great grinder. I was stuck up from a lot of Ranger fans weren't big Brian Boyle fans. I was. You know, he's missed. The fourth line it has struggled. I mean, the fourth line was a big positive for the team last year. Sort of still trying to find their way. Dominic Moore struggling a little bit. Tanner Glass is a disaster. Ranger fans are still trying to figure that one out. and you know, there's a lot of, you know, in and out in the lineup. You know, Vigneault is still trying to figure out that bottom six. You got a lot of young guys, JT Miller, Kevin Hayes, Perfoss. Those guys have been in and out of the lineup. Looks like Hayes stepped up. He looked real good in the Island game. He's one of the few bright spots, you know, for the Rangers. So I think he's going to stick around a little bit in that bottom six. But, yeah, I would say, looking at who left, I would say Stroman. He's the, you know, the biggest loss.
Hey, Kevin, it's Tony. How are you?
Good, man. What's going on?
No, I got a good question for you.
I'll be the judge of that.
You're so polite, Tony.
I want to welcome our guests. I'm sorry. You get to talk first, and I like to go welcome them myself. That's all.
Okay.
It's the way I like to greet people. Okay, Kevin. So this is my thing, okay? You had a really long playoff run last year, okay? I think the Rangers played a game seven in, what, the first three rounds, and then, you know, you went into overtime in, I think, what, three of the five games against the L.A. last year. Are we looking at the at more of a hangover, maybe, or the fact that you had such a long season from last year coming into this year, or is this just a poor start?
I think I would be worried about a hangover if they had brought everybody back where it was essentially the same team, but they have so many new parts, so many young guys like the Duclairs, and I mentioned Hayes and Miller and Foss. And then you bring in a Ryan Malone who's trying to sort of resurrect his career. So he's come in with a chip on his shoulder. So I liked what I saw from the team in camp. It was exciting. It was one of the more exciting camps, I've seen from the Rangers in a while. So I really don't think it's a hangover. I think it's a matter of having a lot of new young faces in the lineup, combined with some lack of depth on defense and some injuries. I mean, the Rangers lost their number one center. Derek Stepan is gone. They lost a top four defenseman out. Zuccarello missed the game with a shoulder injury. And again, they're trying to incorporate a lot of young faces, and there's going to be some growing pains involved. I mean, I see a lot of Ranger fans out on the ledge today. I mean, short memories. I mean, look what happened last year was a disaster. They were an awful team until the end of December, and they still ended up in the Stanley Cup final. So it's going to take a little while for this team to turn it around. I don't expect things to get better. I expect things to – they might get worse before they start getting better for this team. I'm just hoping they can tread water until Stepan is back and until Boyle is back and the young guys get a little more comfortable, So I really don't think it's a hangover. I think it's just a matter of a lot of new young faces combined with some key injuries.
Right on, Kevin. And if you could just expand on some of the new blood here, one of the big stories coinciding with the start of the season was Anthony Duclair. He was making a lot of headlines. What do you see from him so far in the first couple of games, and what do you expect him to be over the course of his career? Where do you see him ending up for this Rangers team?
Yeah, I mean, the kid has a ton of skill. He's a smart player. You could see he gets the game. He's not sort of skating out there with like a chicken with his head cut off. He understands the game well for, a 19-year-old. And, you see him out there, and he's confident. He's out there dangling. And, not everybody likes that. I do. I like a guy with a little flair to his game. The Rangers haven't had a lot of guys like that. So, a little confidence out there, which I really like. I think fans need to, tame a little bit of their expectations of the kid. Again, he's 19. There's going to be some growing pains this year. He may have to, be a healthy scratch every once in a while. I think he's earned a place on the team for the entire year. Looking at the first preseason and through the first four games, he's been one of their better players, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I love what the kid has shown so far. I think he has a ton of potential. I don't want to say, who he resembles or who he might be or live up to. But I think he's going to be one of the better players in the league one of these days. I mean, he has all the skill. He's just, like anyone else, mentally, is he going to be able to show up every day at the rink and put in that same effort? We'll find that out, this season and moving forward.
Kevin, I know you write for one of the largest Ranger blogs in the country, but after watching last night's game, this is your biggest rival. What are your thoughts on the Islanders now, the fact that they're kind of in a resurgence and, you see the rivalry has kind of, had a little bit of a renewed sense with the fans at the Garden last night. So, as the voice of the Ranger fans, what do you
think? Is the hype real?
What do you think?
I love it. I love that the Islanders are better this year. As a kid who grew up through the 80s and the 90s, that was the rivalry. I mean, I talked to a lot of young Ranger fans, and they're saying the Rangers' biggest rival is the Devils or the Flyers, and to me it's the Islanders. There's no other team, and I love for these young guys to see that rivalry is all about. And the way that happens is, unfortunately the Islanders haven't held up their end of the bargain. The Rangers for the most part haven't either. I mean, it's not like they've been that much better over the years. But that rivalry can be brought back, recreated. The juice was in the building. I was watching the game. I heard a lot of "Let's Go Islander" chants from the crowd at MSG. You don't see that a lot. It's usually 50-50 at the Coliseum. Never at the Garden. Last night it sounded like it was closer to 50-50, which to me is great. I love it. I some Ranger fans may, you know, kill me for it, but I want the Islanders to be good. I want it to come down to the Rangers and Islanders fighting for first place. Hopefully you get a playoff series with the two of them, you know, and it, to me, it doesn't get better than that. So I love the move they made. You know, obviously I don't want them to be better than the Rangers, but, you know, to get Boychuk and Letty and, you know, to have Tavares back healthy. And to me, the biggest acquisition is Halak. I mean, to finally get, you know, a goaltender, you know, on the Islanders. I mean, he was ridiculous last night. He won the game for them last night. And we'll win them games throughout the season. I mean, they probably beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs 2 years ago with Halak in goal. So, you know, they're a scary team this year. You know, I don't know if you guys want to hear that coming from a Ranger fan. I don't know if I sort of.
No,
just,
I
like,
love it, Kevin. It warms my heart. This is the reason why I asked this question.
But,
we appreciate you.
Yeah,
honesty.
I mean, if you're a Ranger fan and, you know, listen, obviously I don't want the Islanders to beat the Rangers, but, you know, I think you're fooling yourself if you don't want the Islanders to have a successful season and renew that rivalry. Because to me, that's the only way it's going to get back to what it was if both teams, you know, are at the top of their game.
Absolutely. And just to kind of continue off of that, Kevin, last one from me. Maybe a little bit of a weird question coming from a Ranger fan's point of view, but you are a Long Island guy. I'm sure you've been to the Coliseum plenty of times. One of the things we've been doing so far on the show is just asking people what their, you know, biggest memory in the Coliseum is. We're probably not going to like it. But do you happen to have a particular memory at the Coliseum that sticks out for you, something that, you know, you just kind of remember over the years? No.
I'm trying to say, I mean, I've been there a lot on a number of, you know, different, whether it's concerts or, you know, I played lacrosse in high school, so I used to go there for the Saints games and stuff. I love going there for Ranger Islander games better than I would, as I mentioned before, at the Garden. I just felt like that atmosphere in those Ranger Islander games at the Coliseum were second to none. I mean, just the chants, the fights. I remember I went to a game with my dad, and, you know, I'm, you know, yelling and cursing, you know, people next to us, and he's laughing, egging me on. It was just like, you know, a surreal experience, you know, just being there and the craziness between the two fans. You know, I mean, I've been to Rangers Islander games at the Garden as well, and you never got that. You never got that full-size 50-50, the chance back and forth. And,
right.
You know, it would get rowdy in there. I mean, that's a rowdy barn. I mean, the playoff series that they had against Toronto when Pekka mm-hmm. got taken out, and who was the guy, Bates, who scored on the penalty shot?
That was Sean Bates.
That was a rowdy crowd. I remember that. That's a good place. I mean, it's going to be missed. For me, you know, I like the old school places. I think it's a terrible thing that they're not on Long Island anymore, being a Long Island guy. You know, I'm praising the Islanders too much on this phone call, by the way.
We love it.
As far as a single memory, I'll give you one. I played hockey growing up. My single best memory was this. I was in the skate, stick, and shoot competition, and I got to compete between periods on the ice at an Islander game in front of, like, a packed house. So I got, you know, do the competition. I came in second place. I didn't win, but I came in second place. But I actually got to play in front of, like, an NHL crowd on the Coliseum ice. I don't remember how old I was. I think
so
I was, like, 10 years old.
You lied about being a Ranger fan, otherwise they wouldn't let you on the ice.
No, I didn't have to wear, like, an Islander jersey. It was, like, a Nassau County, whatever. Oh, okay. It was Long Island thing. It wasn't, like, an Islanders thing. It was, like, a Long Island competition. So I made it to the finals, and it was between periods. If they would have made me wear an Islander jersey, I probably wouldn't have went out on the ice, to be honest.
That's hilarious.
I'd have to say that was it. Just being in front of, like, an NHL or on the ice in front of an NHL crowd was actually pretty cool.
Awesome stuff, KD. Well, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us here on our second show. Awesome stuff. We appreciate it, and hopefully we get you back on the show real soon.
Awesome, man. Good luck with the show, guys.
Thanks a lot, Kev.
Thanks, Kev.
Kevin Delury, everybody, of the NYR blog. You can follow him on Twitter at the NYR blog, as well as find him on nyrangersblog.com. That's where he has all his wonderful, or maybe not so wonderful, Ranger.
Depends on who you ask. Ranger fans
yes.
seem to like him very much.
No, that's true. And hey, not for nothing, Kev. You know, he gave us some awesome insight there. He was very honest.
Yeah.
He gave him some praise. It sounds like he believes the hype.
Listen, that's why
ladies
I asked him, because
fan believes the hype.
As big a Ranger fan as he is, I know that he would give me an honest answer. So I knew that asking him that question and allowing him to go into a little bit, that would be – I would get an honest answer out of him. And, he was great. He gave us exactly what we were looking for.
It was good stuff. All right, folks, we're going to take a little break here. You are listening to Hockey Night in New York, part of the HTW Radio Network. We will be back in a bit.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Hockey This Week Radio Network right here at hcwradio.com, home of the Butch Goring Show, the Red Line, and the Neil Smith Show. Our programs feature insights on the NHL from a who's who's list of former NHL stars and media personalities, including Dave Maloney, Terry Frazier, Ken Danico, Bernie Nichols, Guy Carboneau, Liam McGuire, and Scott Laughlin. All HCW shows are broadcast live and archived right here at hcwradio.com. So if you miss a program, you can always listen in 24/7. The 2014-15 NHL season is about to get underway. So keep it right here at the Hockey This Week Radio Network.
Hey, diehard NHL hockey fans, make sure you get a copy of Liam McGuire's brand new book, Next Goal Wins, the ultimate NHL historian's one-of-a-kind collection of hockey trivia, with a foreword by the great Wayne Gretzky. Next Goal Wins is a compendium of hockey lore, legends, stats, and facts from Canada's hockey trivia expert. What makes Liam McGuire's take on hockey trivia unusual? It's the magical connections he builds between the numbers, the players, and the game's history. Besides the straight goods, you always get the ultimate, and did you know? Next Goal Wins combines McGuire's passionate love for the game and his unique approach to hockey's finer points to create a matchless look at the teams and the players, past and present. Available for digital download on iTunes, as well as Random House Canada and Amazon.com, and where books are sold everywhere. That's Liam McGuire's Next Goal Wins. Get it today.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Hockey Night in New York, part of the Hockey This Week Radio Network. You can listen to us live at htwradio.com. You can also catch the archives if you miss us live at that same address. It is now time, Tony, for the Hero of the Week. Maybe a little tougher this time. Last week was a little easy. Gar Snow obviously had the summer of a lifetime for the Islanders. We actually got a couple of games in now. What did you see from the Islanders through those three games? Who is your hero of the week?
Well, you know, it's funny because it's got to be more than one. If you look at it, there's probably three guys on this team that you could say
heroes. I'm kind of hoping you got one and I got one.
All right.
You know, we don't have to agree here. You know what I mean?
I understand.
Okay.
Let me see. I would say my hero of the week, I would probably have to give to Brock Nelson. I think that Brock Nelson come out of the gate and has shown everybody that he is the real deal. He has built off of his 14-goal season last year. I think that he has cemented that second line. He is on the first power play unit now. And what does he have, seven points now?
He's got
seven points in the first three games, four goals. He's taken two shots off the knees from Johnny Boychuk. He definitely, in my opinion, deserves the Hero of the Week.
I think that's a sound choice, Tony. It was kind of between him, Yaro Halak, and Johnny Boychuk.
We are on the same page.
message. I like that.
You know, it's good, you know, for once, I suppose.
I guess.
I'm going to go with Johnny Boychuk. I just think he has been nothing short of fantastic since he jumped into the team. You kind of wondered if there was going to be some gelling issues, if it was going to take a couple of games out of the gate here to see him and Nick Leddy get acclimated. And, I mean, he literally scored the first goal of the season for the Islanders.
Yeah.
So
Seems like he's in on every goal of the season so far, doesn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. He really has. I mean, him and Brock Nelson have kind of been like, you know, you want to talk about people being on the same page.
Mm.
You know, all Johnny has to do is fire the puck to the net, and it's either going in or it's going off Brock Nelson.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's been a nice mutual benefit for the two of them. So I think that's kind of a nice tandem hero of the week there. But yeah, Johnny Boychuk was just awesome so far. And what's interesting too is that we haven't really seen any of those big open ice hits from him yet.
No, he hasn't really done that yet.
You know, and which is fine because obviously, you know, the Islanders have done well without it. But everything else, you know, they threw him on that top power play. He didn't get those kind of minutes with the Bruins.
Nope.
Previously, I think there's some crazy stat where he's already like doubled his power play points that he had through his career with the Bruins or something
I think he has 20% of his points from all of last season in the first three games of this season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so it's already been a silly, I guess, I don't know if revival is the right word, but just a great start for him, you know.
But this is a guy, I mean, he played a defensive role in Boston, but this is a guy in his last year in the AHL had 20 goals, and I believe he had like 60-some-odd points. So it's a guy who has played an offensive game before.
Right.
It's just that at the NHL level, he was given more of a defensive assignment, and that's where he kind of got his niche. But he's a two-way player. And I think we saw this with James Wisniewski a couple of years ago. He's a guy who just didn't have the minutes where he would be like a 20 or a 30-point defenseman, but he was a big hitter. He played some defense. And now he's a 40 or 50-point defenseman because he's given the opportunity.
Well, let's hope that's the case. I mean, we're not going to go by assumption here, but so far he's putting up the numbers of a 40-50 point defense.
But the guy can pass the puck, though. This is not some stay-at-home defenseman who's got stone hands. I mean, the guy's got hands.
Well, that's the thing. What was almost most impressive to me was that, you know, we just talked about how little he's played on the power play, and they threw him out there, and it's like he's been playing it his whole career.
Exactly.
I mean, just the poise that he has back on the blue line, you know, holding the puck, you know, being very calm and cool and collected with it. He's not, you know, rushing the play. He's not rushing the shots on net. He's not rushing his passes. He's looking up.
And he's on a new team.
Right.
And he's on a new team, no less. Forget about the fact that he hasn't been playing the power play for so long. He's on a brand new team. He's only been on the island for, a week and a half?
Right. No, absolutely. It's almost like, you know, he's been practicing the power play on his own, you know, when he was with Boston, just because he just came in so seamlessly. I mean, obviously it helps having guys like, you know, Tavares and Oposo and Nielsen there with you, but he really came in immediately on the power play, and he's been paying huge dividends. And like you said, he kind of was buried a little bit behind the defense in front of him in Boston, you know, like Chara, and, you know, maybe even like a guy like Weidman, you know, to a degree.
Weidman and then Tory Krug last year, he had, you know, 47 points and whatnot. So, yeah, absolutely, I agree with you. And then, you know, and then you look at another guy, you look at Nick Leddy, who has taken a little bit – not that he hasn't played well, because I think he played just fine.
Not.
But I think that you saw a little bit more of what you're going to get out of Nick Leddy last night. You saw him on the rush more last night. You saw him using his speed more last night. He took a couple more shots. He ends up scoring a goal. I think that's the Nick Leddy that we haven't seen to this point.
The one big thing that I've noticed about Nick Leddy so far is that he has no qualms about going deep into the offensive zone.
He's got the speed to get back.
Right, no, exactly. He has the speed to get in, you know, to transition the puck through the zone. And, you know, I've seen him down low a ton, probably more times than any other defenseman was last season at all. Maybe, you know, with the exception of Wisniewski when he's healthy.
Right.
But, I mean, Leddy was – I noticed him down by the goal line quite a few times over the course of these three games. It's like, wow. And it hasn't hurt the team. You know, it's not like he's been getting caught, you know, leading odd man rushes. You know, he does it responsibly.
Yep.
And, you know, he gets back into position. So that was one of the big things that stuck out for me, you know, aside from his smooth skating and, you know, the performance he's had so far. But just the fact that he's just been getting really involved in the play offensively, even if he's not, you know, involved in the points. But he's looked great, too. But Johnny Boychuk, Brock Nelson, Heroes of the Week.
Absolutely. And just one more point on Leddy is that the first couple of games he's carried the puck up the ice, and I've seen him turn those jets on and just kind of just, you know, get going. And I've been wanting to see it and looking and saying, okay, come on, turn him on, kid. Let's go. Let's show everybody that stride that you have. And he hasn't done it. And last night, somewhere about midway through the second period, he took off. and ended up midway. I mean, before anybody could realize where he was at, he was literally, you know, almost between the hash marks. And I said, that is the guy you're going to start to see a lot more of. As soon as he gets comfortable enough, you're going to start to see him turn those jets on like that. He has got tremendous, tremendous speed.
Right, and not only that, I mean, it looks like he's got a shot too. I mean, it may
not be
Johnny Boychuk level, but that shot he fired last night was a cannon.
No, he can score. I'm telling you, this kid has got potential. I mean, listen, you don't get 30-some-odd points playing third-pairing minutes, you know, on a team by accident, okay? That just doesn't happen. So, I mean, the kid has talent. You know, he's getting an opportunity now, and I think you're going to start to see more and more of it because he's definitely more comfortable than he's been at any point since he's been here.
Yeah, no, it's great to see, and you hope that at such a young age of 23, he's going to continue to blossom into you know, the top four defenseman that you know, all Islanders fans hope that he becomes.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like we've covered a good majority of the team here. One spot we didn't really touch on yet was the fourth line. They obviously don't get as many minutes as the rest of the guys, but anything you saw that stuck out for you, Matt Martin, Cal Clutterbuck, and Mr. Cizikas in the middle?
I like what happened Saturday night. I like the fact that it seemed like Tim Gleason was starting to trying to get underneath the forward skin. It's playing a little rough in front of the net, and you know, Jack sends that fourth line out there, and Martin goes right out there and decks Eric Staal. So you know, that sends a message. Listen, that sends a message that you're going to come after us. You're going to try to come after our guys. We're going to go right after you, a top guy. And if you have a problem with it, try something. And that's exactly what happened. Jay Harrison grabbed Martin, and the two of them, you know, threw down at the midway through the second period. So I like the fact that they do that. They have go out there. They still. You know, they hit everything that moves. I think Cizikas he took a bad penalty early on in the game. But, I mean, other than that, and honestly, you know, I didn't think that penalty was even that as bad as, you know, as it seemed at the time. But I like what they bring out there. And, you know, and listen, the Islanders are a tough team to play. They have size. You have Nelson. You have Martin. You have Clutterbuck. They all hit. They all have size. And, you know, you're going to wear teams down. You're going to wear smaller teams down. And, you know, teams like the Rangers who don't have a tremendous amount of size up front, you know, that line is going to go out there and it's going to help over the course of a season wear a team like that down, you know, through the first two periods where you can get an opportunity to put two or three goals on the board.
Yeah, and, you know, it's nice that the Islanders kind of have the depth that they have now and that they can roll, you know, four lines a little bit more. They don't have to be so heavily reliant on one line or another. It seems like, you know, to each, you know, respective degree, things are balanced out, you know, pretty well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we were talking about before KD joined us, before we could really finish on it. We were talking about the defense and the prospect of DeHaan coming back soon and maybe even Vyshnovsky. Have you heard anything as far as Vyshnovsky goes? Any sort of word on when he might be coming back at all? It seems like they've been very quiet on that front.
Well, he hasn't really been skating with the team. I saw him after the game on Saturday, and he looks fine. I mean, he was, you know, walking around. He had his suit on. He was taking pictures with some of the fans there. So I mean, you know, it's not as if he's like out of sight, out of mind type of a thing. But
right. He
hasn't been skating with the team. DeHaan skated today. He skated with Matt Donovan. That's what kind of gives me the inkling that maybe they might be looking to put those two together when DeHaan comes back. I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, it just gives me it gives me the idea that the two of them might go in together once DeHaan is ready.
That's an interesting proposition there. I thought maybe that would be the case just because they're kind of the extra defenseman right now. You know, I mean, Donovan was the seventh coming.
That's what
in.
I did, but I figured DeHaan can't be out. I mean, he's been skating for a week and a half. He's got to get back in the lineup sooner or later. If he's not back in tomorrow night, he's got to be back in Saturday against Pittsburgh.
I suppose so. I guess we'll find out soon enough, right? I mean, it's right around the corner. Big test tomorrow night against the Sharks. The Sharks are rolling as well. They're also one of the few undefeated teams left in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Came out and destroyed the Kings in their first game out.
Yep.
Playing very well. A little bit of a restructuring for the Sharks as well. Joe Thornton, no longer the captain. Looks like they're starting to go, you know, favor the youth a little bit here. They got guys like Hurdle. Pavelski's taking a more, you know, a bigger leadership role now with the team. What do you think of this Sharks team coming in, you know, after all the changes and obviously the very heartbreaking first-round loss to the Kings last season? What are you expecting to see from the Sharks tomorrow night against the Isles?
You know, this is it's a long road trip for the Sharks. I mean, they play the Rangers over the weekend. They were in New Jersey They were in Washington the other night. So this is a long far road trip for a team right out of the gate. I mean, you know, I mean they're cross country. So I don't know exactly what to expect from them. I mean, they, you know, Washington took them to overtime the other night. What was that score? 6-5 was that final score of that game? It was like a crazy game back and forth. Hope came out after the first 10 minutes, and you know, San Jose was up and then they're down. You know, I San Jose is a great team. I like that coach very much. I think they got obviously you got, you know, Hall of Famer in Joe Thornton. You got you got Patrick Marleau. You have Logan Couture, the kid that you said, Thomas Hurdle. You know, they got a tremendous talent up front. Their blue line has always been kind of, kind of iffy, you know.
Right, no more Dan Boyle.
No more Dan Boyle, okay, of course. And then you have goaltending, which really, for them, has run as hot and cold it could possibly be, because you got a guy in Antti Niemi who can go through 2 weeks of being the absolute best goaltender in the NHL and then go through 2 weeks of being the absolute worst goaltender in the NHL. So
right.
He nearly played himself out of a job last year on a team that went to the playoffs and actually played well in the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, and almost lost his job to Alex Stalick right before the end of the season. A lot of teams were saying that, a lot of experts were saying that, you know, Stalick was going to get a chance to, you know, to take the number one reins there. So,
right.
You know, you don't know what you're going to get out of it. You got 3-0 team. You got a team that, you know, like I said, mauled the Kings and then goes up 3-0 or 4-0 on Washington and they end up in overtime. So
yeah, and that whole thing with the captaincy is just bizarre. I don't even know
crazy.
What to make of that.
How do you take the C away from Joe Thornton? I mean, the guy has been Mr. San Jose Shark since he was traded there. I mean,
and he's the fall guy here. Is Joe Thornton the reason why they lost four straight against the Kings in the first round?
Absolutely not. And then, but you got to remember, they did it. They've done this once before. They took the C away from Patrick Marleau. When Thornton came there, and then Thornton became the captain. So this is
That's
not the
right.
first time that they've done that.
That's very bizarre. I don't know what to make of it.
No,
I don't.
Weird. It's weird.
I don't know what the motivation behind
and
it
Joe
is.
And Joe is just like, he's like the consummate professional. I mean, he just goes out there. He does his thing every year. I mean, honestly, when you go and you see it in San Jose, you could say, okay, he doesn't perform. He's not like the A-Rod of the Sharks.
No.
I mean, the guy, he
puts
just,
up 800 assists every season.
All he does is just put. He just produces every single year. Yeah. It's not his. I mean, it's always been something else. It's always been, you know, the defense. It's always been the goaltending. Nabokov has had some horrible playoff series. Which,
yeah.
You know, again, Niemi was not very. You know, you can't really. I don't understand it. I mean, the guy is just he's been there forever. How do you take the C away from him? And then they give him an A, no less.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. Yeah. Give us your C. But hey, you know, here's an A, right? So you're an alternate now.
You could be an alternate captain, but
right.
We don't think you should be the captain anymore.
Yeah, it's just very bizarre. It makes you wonder what goes on behind the scenes, you know, with these teams. And who knows, you know, we obviously don't watch the West as much. We don't see the Sharks as much as they do out there in San Jose. So maybe there's this method to the madness, but from my point of view and seemingly yours, it just doesn't seem to add up. It doesn't make sense.
No, it just you know, to me, it sounded, and when I first heard about it, it sounded to me like a coach that was on the hot seat that was just trying to grasping at straws and anything he could do to try to change
maybe
whatever he could.
Deflect
in
the conversation.
Exactly,
yeah.
And that's what it seemed like to me when it happened. You know, but why would you pick, I mean, you know, again, why would you pick on a guy who's been playing on your team for how long, is, you know, again, who produces for you year in and year out, and then you embarrass him like that and tell him, well, we're going to take the C off you, child.
Well,
doesn't make any sense.
So far, it seems like it doesn't matter. They're 3-0.
No,
if
this year it doesn't.
If nothing else, as we've seen, they're a great regular season team, and things seem to fall apart in the playoffs.
That's been the knock.
They're coming into the Coliseum. It seems like fans are, as we were saying before, buying up some tickets for tomorrow. Hopefully, mm-hmm. we see a decent crowd. Because as you and I know, and any fans listening out there, during the week is a tough sell for the Islanders. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if they come out after this 3-0 start. And, you know, new guys like Boychuk, Halak, and Letty, they've kind of been spoiled, you know, by that home opener. They were spoiled last night. There was a ton of Islander fans at the Garden last night.
Yeah.
You kind of hope that, you know, that doesn't wear off and, you know, these new guys don't play to a half-empty building, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you would hope to think that, you know, that the start would continue the momentum, that the fans would want to continue the momentum. I mean, I can't see them, you know, selling out every game this year, which you would think when a building is closing that would be the case, but I can't see it. But you see, but the Islanders, again, have, you know, it's a different dynamic because you have guys like myself, okay, that if you work in, you know, if you work in Manhattan or Brooklyn or Queens, it is very tough to get to the Coliseum by 7 o'clock because if you get out of work at 5 or 5:30, which isn't the normal day at this point now, to try to get back, you know, I mean, I would have to leave – you know, my building, when I, you know, when I'm at work, I'd have to leave, you know, almost a half an hour early in order to get to the Coliseum on time for game time. So when they changed the time from 7, you know, from 7:30, which used to be years ago,
right,
to 7 o'clock, it made anybody who works west or all the way out east, it's a tough sell to try to get
sure
there on time.
Sure. Well, it'll be interesting. One thing I will say, just to use another parallel from the 2001-2002 season, after they went on that big start, that 9-0-1-1 start, whatever mm-hmm it is, and maybe a little Durham, maybe towards the tail end of it, the Islanders did, if I recall correctly, sell out about 22 or 23 home games that season because of that start.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I believe you're right.
So, you know, that being said, if the Islanders kind of continue this little tear that they're on right now, you know, maybe we see the attendance continue to increase. And like you said, the fact that it is the last season in the old barn, maybe we finally see some fans coming out, and all of a sudden the Islanders are a hot ticket and they're a tough buy.
Well, at this point, it should definitely be a hot ticket regardless. I mean, you look at the, you know, you see what they did the first couple of games. You've seen, you know, you've seen the players that they brought in have all started to produce. So at this point, going into this part of the season and seeing the younger players and the excitement that they brought, and it's an exciting brand of hockey. I mean, they scored 15 goals in 3 games. I mean, you know,
yeah,
it's you know, they play fast. They play, you know, they hit, they check. You know, maybe it's not, you know, old-time hockey where it's you know, there's fighting or this or that or whatever, but this is an exciting team to watch. So, you know, in my opinion, even if they, you know, play, you know, towards the bottom of the, you know, into that bottom playoff spot,
mm-hmm,
or trying to get to that point, they're going to be an exciting team to watch this year.
Right. Well, you know what, I look at it this way. You know, it is only 3 games. You know, maybe, and I understand this, fans are still kind of waiting to see, you know, the whole fool me once, fool me twice, fool me 30 times, you know, with the Islanders. So maybe, you know, fans are just biding their time right now, waiting to see, you know, if this is actually for real and if they're actually going to give them a reason to come out and they're going to be competitive this year. So, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting to watch.
I think in years past, when a team has decided to, you know, as we talked about last week, kind of hit the scrap heap and bring in, you know, these you know, kind of what's the word I'm looking for? You know, piecemeal kind of players, you know, kind of just fillers. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Okay, so you have, you know, in years past, and I can understand fans because, you know, why am I going to spend $65 on a ticket for myself,
right,
to go and watch a, you know, you know, as we said again last week, a Marty Reisner or a Jay Pandolfo or something.
Right.
Why am I going to do that? If the team is not spending money, why should I invest my hard-earned money in going
and
watching?
And you can't blame them.
And you can't blame them at all. But in a year where they've gone out and they've spent money on the goaltenders, they've spent money on trying to bring the forwards in, they've spent money on bringing in the two defensemen, they've spent money on signing their own players to
right
long-term deals,
right,
you have to look and see that they're now probably midway, which is not a bad thing because you're going to have to sign a lot of these younger guys who are signed to ELCs and bridge contracts at this point. So to the point where now you can say as a fan, well, my team and my owner for the time being,
yes,
has spent the money and has spent the money to get my team to the playoffs, I feel much better about going and spending my hard-earned money on going and buying tickets and paying for parking and buying a Fisherman T-shirt, which they happen to put on Twitter today. If you saw them,
yes,
they are.
I did.
And they are
the
far
fan base
read,
is divided. The fan base is divided.
There are a lot of people that are going to go buy that shirt.
Well,
I can't believe what I was reading today.
What's very interesting about this is that it's the youth, Tony. It's the youths.
It is the youths.
And apparently, the Fisherman logo is a hip thing with the young kids.
It seems to be.
And I think somebody in the Brain Trust over there, you know, at the Islanders organization was like, you know what, we might be able to make a couple bucks here.
The new marketing people, who are the Barclays people, and seriously, do you think that anybody would ever think of bringing that logo anywhere near the Islander team store,
right,
up until this coming season?
No, 100%,
but
Tony.
These people, as I've said a million times before, everything they touch turns to gold.
I literally was saying to a buddy of mine earlier today, we were talking about this very thing, and I said, buddy, did you think that after approximately 20 years, that this thing was going to make the team some money at some point? That they're going to be selling these things?
Absolutely. In the team store. superstar, no less.
Right.
I mean, you can. I can understand maybe if Mike Modell's had something, or but I mean, in the actual team store,
yeah.
You are seeing a logo that has been so loathed over the years. I mean, the next thing you're going to see is that the Kings are going to bring back the old Burger King jersey.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised
at this point. Why not?
I'll be perfectly honest with you. If somebody made a Burger King T-shirt, I would get it. I would wear it.
I will tell you right now. I have tried, because you know about me and the jersey.
Yes, I do.
I have tried over the years. Countless times to be able to acquire one of those jerseys, and every time they go up on eBay, it's $500-$700 in a box.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they only wore I think one time.
Right. Yeah. No. It's so funny. It's so funny to see. And
the horrible jerseys are the ones that sell the best.
Yeah. Well, you know, you market it in the right way, and you know, like I was saying before, with this the youth, for whatever reason, they like it. And I wrote in my piece, which was you know, not well received by everybody. but look,
I wonder why.
Yeah, yeah. But look, if you look at that logo and even the uniform from a completely aesthetic point of view, you forget about, you know, the fact that it just so happens to look like the Gordon's Fisherman, you know,
or Stan Fisher. Or,
yeah, or Stan Fisher, or the fact that it ushered in one of the worst eras in team history, and that's what it represents.
Stan Fisher, by the way, actually thinks that it looks like him also.
Well, I mean, you know, it's,
if you watch Kevin Connolly's documentary, he actually said
no. I saw it. Well, look, I mean, it's an old guy with white hair. I mean, you can't, you know, that's pretty much
it's
it.
The
right?
Beard. I
no
think,
disrespect to Mr. Fischler, but
no, it's the beard also.
Right, the beard as well. It does. But like I was saying, I mean, as a logo, as a design, like if that was a brand new team, you say okay, they're on an island, right? They have that whole thing going on. You know, fishing is a big thing here on Long Island, you know.
Used to be.
If it doesn't resemble Gordon's Fisherman, the Rangers don't have anything. You know, there's no We Want Fish Sticks, and that was obviously a big thing, right? I mean, that just made Islander fans crazy, because you didn't want to give Ranger fans a reason to be, you know, to have something on the Islanders, right, to chant, right? The Islanders had 1940 for all those years.
What year was the year that they came out with the Fisherman jersey? What year was it?
1995.
It was 95. It was right after, of course, 94, which ended the 1940
yes,
chant.
Yes, exactly.
So it turned the tide almost.
Yes.
Of course, and there was a tide on it because it had the waves and that was the whole thing. So.
Nice.
But I mean,
segue there,
you like that, right? But no, seriously. But if you, but let's just stick with this this whole stupid uniform thing for
sure,
a second.
Sure, why not?
Because you have the jersey.
About three people left listening.
Maybe. And those are the people that want to buy the T-shirt.
Right.
So you have the jersey that you take the fisherman. They realize, okay, this is a complete and utter disaster. We're going to take it and we're going to get rid of it. So what do? Instead of redesigning the entire uniform, they take the old jersey. They put the Islander logo, the old Islander logo.
Oh, yeah.
So you take a jersey a logo that is completely circular and symmetrical,
but
you put it on a jersey with all these waves
and
lines all
over. If I remember right, and I could be wrong here, but I think that had to do with like league stipulations. Like once you introduce a new jersey, you have to have it for X amount of time. Because I remember reading up on all the stuff back when it was happening, and because the uniform was so loathed at the time, you know, by the fans and everyone, the media. I mean, everybody was just taking a duty on that thing.
Well,
you know,
well deserved.
Right? No, no question about it. It was a terrible idea. It wasn't a bad logo per se. It was just a terrible idea. The timing was awful. Yada yada yada. But and I just lost my train of thought here.
It was the league rules.
Oh yes, thank you, thank you. Yes, I think that they had no choice. That they had to keep the uniform, and I think the only thing the league was willing to allow them to do was change the logo, because I think if they were able, they would have just gotten rid of it completely. I think they had to keep it for X number of years, so they were like, all right, well, at least we can get rid of Mr. Gordon, you know, to get people to start forgetting about that, and people were somewhat satisfied and happy with the fact that it was gone.
Did you see that? Were you there the night? I don't know how old you were at the time, but were you there the night where they actually introduced the new jersey with the old crest on the new uniform? Were you there when they did that?
I might have been. I was going to a lot of games back then.
I was, and it was the idea was to have Steve Webb skate out, because he was the fan favorite of the entire team at that point,
which speaks volumes about that team.
Yes, it does. Him and Dan Plant, I think, were the two.
Oh my god!
So they have Steve Webb skate out to center ice. The whole place is dark. They got a spotlight on him, and he rips the fisherman jersey off.
I remember that.
And there underneath it is the same freaking jersey with the old crest on.
That is, man, those were dark days.
It was unbelievable. unbelievable.
That's awful.
It was unbelievable.
I remember that.
I actually laughed. I laughed out loud.
How
as
did not?
Most of the people in my section when
how
it happened.
Not? That's unbelievable.
And the place went nuts when it happened. The place went nuts.
That just goes to show you how much that logo was just hated. Hated.
It was. I know. I remember.
Off. And now they're bringing it back for some love.
Well, you see, and the funny thing is that, you know, at the time there was no internet, there was no Twitter or anything like that. So the only way you get your information was when the newspaper came the next morning or when they had something on the news.
Right.
So it had on, they had on News 12 because that was the thing at the time. The Islanders,
sure,
we would get all their news from News 12. And the guy came on and said, the Islanders are releasing their new logo and new uniforms tomorrow, or, you know, at a press conference in the morning. So I had to wait the night after and then wait to see what the logo and the uniform would look like because the press conference would be televised the next day. And I said, I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait. And I saw the logo, and I literally said, oh, my God.
Yeah, what a disaster.
And I was only, I think I was only like 13 at the time, which is just, I mean, it was awful.
That was, I believe that was one of the few jerseys that Brett Lindros wore. Wasn't he still with the team?
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
yes,
Brett Lindros. So I remember the papers. I remember seeing a picture of him in the papers wearing the fisherman logo. And Milbury had the, that was back when starter jackets were still big.
That's,
he had the starter jacket with the fisherman logo on it.
Oh, yep, he would
what
wear his, yeah, that was the first. I think the first picture of him in an Islander garb was him at the Coliseum with his Islander sweatsuit on and his flip flops, and he was ready to go for practice.
Well, they certainly bided their time, and now it looks like they might actually find a way to make some more money off of that logo, and that is just unbelievable.
Well, they didn't make any money off it the first time, so they might as well make
no,
money off it now.
No, certainly. Although you still see some in the Coliseum, you still see people wearing them.
Because people have refused to buy anything
for
the last 20
true.
Years. So
I don't know if that's
why.
A good thing or a bad thing. But,
well, yeah, listen.
But, and real quick, before we wrap up here, small little tidbit. Something that did not happen yesterday, and just, I mean, basically in typical Islander fashion, I mean, obviously it means nothing, but there was supposed to be a press conference yesterday.
Yes.
Announcing the sale of the team. And, of course, by some force of nature.
Yeah,
the press conference was at the last minute postponed.
They said that it was a
TBD
scheduling
an unavoidable business scheduling issue
conflict.
Or something. Yeah,
yes, conflict.
So
we'll
I don't
have
think
to
that,
wait another week to meet Mr. Ledecky.
Yeah,
Mr.
I don't think that means that the sale is falling through or that there's
no,
anything
I don't
to worry
so.
About.
No,
there.
They announced the sale. It's already
yeah. No,
I
no, I know,
already,
I know. But
so.
I mean. Was anybody shocked or surprised by that announcement? I mean,
I don't think there's anything that could ever happen in Island Country
right.
that could surprise anybody.
Like, I saw it was tweeted out, you know, when the news first broke, and I was just like, this is amazing. This is par for the course. I said, I laughed.
It
I was
is.
Like, this
it
is unbelievable.
But I saw it too. I said, no, this can't be. This has got to be a joke.
There's not one thing throughout this whole sale process that has gone smoothly, aside from the fact that it finally happened. But I mean
that part of it went pretty smoothly, I guess. I mean,
eventually, but you just look at the saga from beginning to end with Barway and yada. I mean, just all that stuff.
Well,
just amazing that they couldn't even do the press conference on time. They scheduled the press conference, and the night before, the day before, they're like, "Yeah, remember that? Remember that press conference?
Yeah, we really can't do that today.
That's not happening.
Let's try tomorrow."
Yeah.
No, and there's no other date. But like I said, you know, we'll have to wait another week or so to meet the new majority owners, and I'm very interested to hear what they have to say.
Me too. But did you see the Newsday article, you know, that broke the news or showed the news on the delay? Did you see the picture of Malkin in the paper?
No, I didn't see it.
He had, like, two black eyes and a bandage on his forehead. It looked like he just got out of Fight Club the night before.
You know what, though?
It's unbelievable.
That might be fantastic. That might be awesome. I mean, just think about it. I mean, he's just, you know, we don't know anything about this guy. Maybe he... You know,
I don't know. I'm curious. It's going to be very interesting. I'm curious to see. I mean, I'm sure they had some better pictures, but they look like he just
this would. That would just be typical news.
That's hilarious. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for sticking with us. That is all we have for tonight. Hockey night in New York. Thanks a lot for joining us here. We will be switching to a regular night on Sundays going forward. Not this Sunday, but the one following. Catch us on htwradio.com on the archives if you miss us live. I'm Sean Cuthbert for Tony Stabile and Paul Cuthbert. Thank you very much and good night.